collection of energies, all thoughts captured in one person's being, and the grand privileges of the Lingua Divina. These are reserved for the deathless, for those who take and give life. She grinned and looked at Sanchia. Don't you see? Don't you understand? Sanchia's skin crawled. You mean the Hierophants made themselves the same way they made their devices, said Estelle. They took the minds and souls of others and invested them in their very bodies. Sanchia watched, sickened, as Tomas's form began to shudder, as if it were being liquefied. Then his eyes began to fill with blood. Oh, God! A single human form! Cried Estelle, triumphant. Yet within it, dozens, hundreds, thousands of minds and thoughts. A person brimming over with vitality, with meaning, with power, swirling reality around themselves, able to not just patch over reality, but change it with a whim. Tomas's body crumpled inward, collapsing in on itself, his shattering arms and chest erupting with blood that then, in full defiance of physics, shrank back into his body, forced in by his unnatural gravity. You're scrumming insane, Sanchia said. No, Estelle laughed. I'm just well-read. I waited for so long for Tomas to collect all the tools and resources I need. All the ancient sigils. I was so patient. But then, old Orso presented a wonderful opportunity. And as they say, you never turn down an opportunity. She reached into her robes and took out something glimmering and gold. A long, oddly toothed key. Sanchia stared. Clef. Clef, said Estelle. You have a name for it. That's rather pathetic, isn't it?
You scrumming bitch, said Sanchia, furious. How did you get him? How did you?
Then she stopped. Where's Gregor? Estelle turned to look at her husband.
What did you do? Demanded Sanchia. What did you do to Gregor? What did you do to him?
I did what was necessary, said Estelle, to gain my freedom. Wouldn't you?
Sanchia stared, disgusted and terrified, as Tomas's body slowly lost form and shape, turning into a boiling ball of blood and viscera, which shrank and shrank and shrank.
If you hurt him, said Sanchia, if you hurt him, you,
it could have been worse. She gestured at the monstrous sight before her. I could have put him through this.
Tomas's body was now about the size of a small cannonball. It was shuddering slightly in the air, as if it could no longer bear the pressure. Estelle stood up tall, and despite her mussed hair and her smeared makeup, her eyes were bright and hard and commanding. And suddenly, Sanchia understood why people had thought Tribuno Candiano a king.
Tomorrow, I shall do what my father always dreamt of, but never accomplished. And at the same time, I will take away all he valued, and all you valued as well, husband. I will become Company Candiano, and then I will collect all that I have been denied.
And then, the small red ball that had once been Tomas Ziani simply
there was a loud, curious coughing sound, and the room instantly filled with a fine, swirling red mist. Sanchia shut her eyes and turned her head away as she felt warm drops stippling her face and neck. She heard Estelle sputtering and spitting somewhere in the room.
Ugh, I suppose I hadn't thought of that, but every design does have its limit.
Sanchia tried not to shake. She tried not to think of Clef in Estelle's hands, of what she could have done to poor Gregor.
Focus. What can I do now? How can I get out of this?
Estelle spat some more, coughed and called out, It's done!
The red mist continued to settle,
There was the sound of footsteps in the hallway beyond. Two Candiano soldiers walked in. They did not seem surprised by the sight of all these corpses, or the whole room coated in a thin layer of blood.
"Shall we burn them as discussed, ma'am?"
asked one. "Yes, Captain," said Estelle. She was now red from head to foot, and she cradled the Imperiat and Clef in her hands like twin infants. "I am quite eager to finally play with these on my own, but have we seen any movements from the Dandolos?"
"Not yet, ma'am."
"Good. Arrange for my escort to the mountain and mobilize our forces," said Estelle. "The entire Candiano Campo must be locked down and patrolled from now until midnight. Issue orders suggesting Tomas has gone missing, and we suspect foul play."
"Yes, ma'am."
Sanchia listened closely, and that word, orders, suddenly gave her an idea. She took a breath, focused on the shackles again, and realized she'd been thinking of them wrong. She'd been focused purely on the shackles, on the bands of steel, and what they expected or wanted. But she hadn't realized there might be more to the system. What's breath but not a breath? There were the restraints for her ankles and wrists, yes. But now that she searched them, she realized the shackles were eagerly awaiting a signal from another part of the rig, one she'd totally missed, set on the end of the operating table. She looked down and saw this component was small, set on the edge of the stone surface. She reviewed its commands and saw it was constructed similarly to how Orso had described the oral relay device, a thin, delicate needle trapped in a cage that moved with vibrations of sound. Only it needed to move in a specific fashion. "Of course," thought Sanchia. "Of course!" Is the secret a word?" she asked the shackles quickly. "A command? A password?" "Yes," said the shackles simply. She nearly sighed with triumph. It must be like a safe word. Someone could say the right phrase aloud, and the needle would move in just the right way, and then the shackles would pop open. "What's the word?" asked Sanchia.
"Secret," said the shackles.
They sounded amused. "Tell me the secret word," she said.
"Cannot share the word. It is secret. So secret even I don't know it."
"Then how do you know when the secret is said?"
"When the needle moves the right way."
This was frustrating. She wondered how Clef would have figured this out. He always phrased and rephrased questions or ideas until they didn't break the rules, in essence. So how to do that here? She got an idea. "The secret," she said. "If I said, huh, would it move the needle the right way, like the start of the secret?" A long pause. Then the shackles said,
"No."
"And you would have said yes if it did?"
"Yes."
She swallowed, relieved. "Of course," she thought, "because asking about phonetics, not words, doesn't break the rules.
If I said tuh, would it move the needle like the start of the secret?"
"No." "If I said seh, would it move the needle like the start of the secret?"
"No."
"If I said ma, would it move the needle like the start of the secret?"
"Yes," said the shackles. She took a breath. "So the password starts with an M. Now I just need to keep guessing as fast as I can."
"And the girl?"
said the guard.
"Dispose of her," said Estelle. "However you like. She is of no consequence."
"Yes, ma'am."
He saluted as Estelle turned and left, leaving him alone in the room with Sanchia. Shit, thought Sanchia. She started guessing faster and faster, and she realized then that she could communicate faster with rigs than she could with people. Just like when there'd been a sudden, impenetrable burst of messages between Clef and a rig, she could focus her thoughts and ask dozens, if not hundreds, of questions at once. Her mind became a chorus of no's, with the occasional yes. And slowly, steadily, she assembled the password in her mind. The guard walked over and looked down at her.
His eyes were small and watery and deep-set. He looked her over with the air of a man reviewing a meal and wrinkled his nose.
Not really my type.
Uh-huh, said Sanchia. She shut her eyes, ignored him, and focused on her restraints.
You praying, girl?
No, said Sanchia. She opened her eyes.
You going to make any noise?
He asked. He thoughtlessly pinched the fabric of his trousers just next to his crotch and started kneading it back and forth.
I don't mind that, honestly, but it'd be a bit inconvenient with the boys in the hall.
The only noise I'm going to make, she said, is mango.
Is what?
With a pop, all of Sanchia's shackles swung open. The guard stared and said,
What in the...
Sanchia sat up, snatched his hand, stuffed his wrist into the shackles, and snapped them shut. Stunned, the guard stared at his hand and heaved at it. It didn't budge.
You!
Sanchia jumped off the table and smashed the listening needle in the cage. There, now you'll stay put.
Clemente!
He bellowed.
She's loose! She's loose! Send everyone! Everyone!
Sanchia punched the guard in the side of the head as hard as she could. He staggered and slipped, his hand still stuck in the shackles. Before he could react, she knelt and unsheathed his scribed rapier. She looked at the blade, alight with commands. She could see it was made to amplify gravity, to believe it had been hurled through the air with inhuman force. Then there were footsteps in the hallway, lots of them. Sanchia took stock of the situation. The hallway beyond was the only exit, and it was rapidly filling up with guards from the sound of it. She had just the sword on her, and given her new talents, that gave her a considerable advantage. But probably not enough to take on a dozen men with the springles and the like. She looked around the room. The far wall was made of stone, and her talents allowed her to glimpse the commands on the other side. These were fainter and more difficult to read, probably due to the distance. But she could see that one rig was scribed to be unnaturally dense, almost unbreakable, a thin rectangular plate seemingly set in the wall. A foundry window, she thought, and she'd had recent experience with those. She addressed the rapier.
You amplify gravity, yes?
When I approach proper speeds, my density achieves amplification and gravity is tripled.
The sword bellowed back promptly. How amplified does your density get?
It is as though there are 20 of me,
said the sword. And how much do you weigh?
Ah, this is less defined. I weigh as much as I weigh.
Oh, no, that's wrong. You actually weigh this much. The guards were close now. Sanchia put the sword on the ground and stood on it with both feet. Then she picked it back up, took a few steps away from the far wall, and lifted the blade. She aimed carefully. Then she hurled the sword forward, dropped to the floor behind the table, and covered her head. It had been a stupefyingly easy thing to do, really. The sword's weight had been essentially undefined, so she just stood on the blade and told it that this new weight it was experiencing was the sword's actual weight. But this definition only mattered when its scrivings were activated, specifically when it was swung at the proper speed, which included being thrown. Now, when the sword activated its scrivings, it did not think it was as heavy as 20 6-pound rapiers, but rather 20 116-pound rapiers. And then, of course, it amplified its gravity, which made the effect even more extreme. When the rapier hit the far stone wall, it was like it had been struck by a boulder falling off the side of a mountain. There was a tremendous crash. Shrapnel and debris rained throughout the room, and dust filled the air. Sanchia lay on the ground, covering her head and neck with her hands as the pebbles and rocks rained down on her. Then she stood and dashed through the hole in the wall to the window on the far side of the room. She barely had time to look out. She was about 60 feet up above the Candiano Campo. Like a lot of the Candiano Campo, this area was deserted, but there was a wide canal just below the wall. She jumped up and shoved the window open. Then she lifted herself up, through and over, and then she hung on the window of the foundry, reviewing her options to descend. She heard the sounds of shouts within, and looked up through the window to see 7 Candiano soldiers charge in. They stared at her, hanging there on the window, and raised their espringles. For a moment, she debated what to do. She knew the window ascribed to be unnaturally durable, but she knew at a glance that the soldiers' espringles were quite advanced. The hell with it, she thought. She turned and leapt off the window, arms outstretched for the canal below. She tumbled end over end. She heard the window explode above her, and she opened her eyes. And then she saw. Even though she had no mind for it, she nearly cried, "Oh my God!" as she fell. Yet not out of fear or dismay, but rather wonder. For she was still seeing the scrivings around her. And as she fell, she did something more, something she had no idea she could do. It was like there was a floodgate in her mind, and out of fear or wonder or instinct, it opened up just as she opened her eyes. Sanchia saw the nightscape of Tavan below her, suddenly rendered in the juddering, jangly tangles of silver scrivings. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them. Like a dark mountain range covered in tiny candles. She watched in wonder as the scribed bolts hissed through the air above her, glittering like falling stars as they sped out over the city, a city that swarmed with minds and thoughts and desires, like a forest full of fireflies. It's like the night sky, she thought as she fell. No, it's even more beautiful than that. The canal waters rose up to her, and she crashed through. Sanchia swam through unspeakable filth, through rot and flotsam and jetsam, through scum and industrial slurry. She swam until her body was as overwhelmed as her mind, until her shoulders were like fire and her legs like lead, until she finally crawled onto the muddy channel shores below the white Dandolo walls, exhausted and trembling. Slowly she stood, then filthy, reeking and bloody. She turned and faced the sight of smoky, foggy, starlit Tavan, stretched out beneath the skies. She focused and opened the floodgates inside of her. She saw Tavan alight with thought and words and commands, all faint and flickering, like spectral candles burning under the purple morning skies. Then Sanchia, chest heaving, clenched her fists and screamed. A long, hoarse cry of defiance, of outrage, of victory. And as she screamed, some curious things happened in the campo blocks around her. Scribed lights flickered uncertainly. Floating lanterns suddenly bobbed low, dropping a few feet, as if they'd heard dismaying news. Carriages abruptly slowed, just for half a block or so. Doors that had been scribed to stay shut slowly creaked open. Weapons and armaments that had been commanded to feel lighter felt, for one instant, a bit heavy. It was like all the machines and devices that made the world run experienced a fleeting moment of paralyzing self-doubt. And they all whispered, "What was that? Did you hear that?" Sanchia had no idea what she had done. But she did understand one thing. In some wordless fashion, the Sanchia that the stars touched right now was slightly less human than the one they had touched the night before. Chapter 33.
"It's a cowardly plan, sir," said Berenice.
"Oh, come off it, Berenice," said Orso. "It's been 7 hours, and we've seen neither hide nor hair of Sanchia or Gregor. No messages, no communications, nothing. And the Candiano Campo is suddenly completely shut down? Something has gone wrong, and I've no interest in sticking around to see what."
"But
But we can't just leave, Tavan, said Berenice, pacing back and forth across the crypt.
I could, said Geo.
The two scrappers were obviously terrified. They were far more vulnerable than two Campo scrivers.
Maybe instead of paying us, said Claudia, you can pay for our passage out of here.
We can't abandon Sanchia and Gregor, said Berenice. We can't leave the Imperiad in Tomaziani's hands. A man like that, think of the damage he could do.
I am thinking of that, said Orso. I can't stop thinking about it. That's why I want to get the hell out of here. And as for Sanchia and Gregor...
Berenice stopped and glared at him.
Yes?
Orso grimaced.
They made their choice. They knew the risks. We all did. Some wind up lucky and others don't. We're survivors of all this, Berenice. The wisest thing to do is just keep surviving.
She heaved a great sigh. To think of us hopping aboard a ship and sneaking away in the dead of night.
What else are we supposed to do? Said Orso. We're just some scrivers, girl. We can't design our way out of this. The idea is preposterous. Anyways, Sanchia and Gregor are smart people. Maybe they can find their own way out.
They froze as they heard the stone door roll away in the crypt passage beyond. This was troubling, because only Geo had the key, and that was currently sitting in his pocket. They looked at one another, alarmed. Orso held a finger to his lips. He stood, grabbed a wrench, and gingerly approached the opening of the passageway. He paused. He could hear slow footsteps approaching. He swallowed, took a breath, and screamed and leapt in front of the passageway, wrench raised over his head. He skidded to a stop. Standing before him, grim and stone-faced, was a wet, filthy, bloody Sanchia grotto.
Holy hell, said Orso.
Sanchia, cried Berenice.
She ran to her, but stopped a few feet away.
My God, what happened to you?
Sanchia had not yet seemed to notice either of them. She was just staring into the middle distance. But at these words, she slowly blinked and looked at Berenice, meeting her eyes.
What? She said faintly.
They stared at her. She had a slash on her head, cuts on her forearms, a bruise on her cheek, and crusts of dried blood all over her face and neck. But the worst part about her was her eyes. One eye remained the same, the usual white with dark brown. But the other eye, her right, was flooded with red. It was like she'd received some fierce blow to the side of her head, one that had almost killed her. Sanchia exhaled, then said in a croaking voice, "What a lovely sight you are, Berenice." Berenice blushed hugely, turning bright crimson.
What the hell happened? Demanded Orso. Where have you been?
He looked at the open door to the crypt.
And how the hell did you get in?
I need to sit down, said Sanchia softly.
And I need a drink. Berenice helped her into a chair, while Geo opened a bottle of cane wine.
Don't bother with the glass, whispered Sanchia.
He popped it open, handed it over to her, and she took a huge swig.
You look, my girl, Geo said, like the shepherd who climbed the mount and saw God's face in the skies.
You're not quite wrong there, she said darkly.
What happened to you, Sanchia?
Asked Orso.
What did you see?
She started talking. At some point, the words just ran out. A long, long silence stretched on. And while Berenice, Geo, and Claudia looked pale and shaken, Orso looked like he was about to vomit. He carefully cleared his throat.
So, he said, Hierophant?
Yeah, said Sanchia. He nodded, trembling.
Estelle Thandiano.
He said.
formerly Ziani.
Yes, said Sanchia.
Was in some way behind all of this from the start.
Yeah.
And now she has murdered her husband.
Yeah.
And she now intends to become one of the Ancient Ones.
Orso spoke, like saying the words aloud would make them make more sense. I guess it wouldn't be that ancient if she's doing it right now, said Sanchia. But yeah, that's the sum of it. She bowed her head. And Gregor. I think Gregor's dead. And she has Clef. She has everything. Clef, the Imperiat, the box with the voice in it. Everything. Orso blinked and stared into a wall. Then he held out a hand and whispered,
Give me that scrumming bottle.
Sanchia handed it over. He took a huge pull from it. Then, legs quaking, he sat down on the floor.
I didn't think Tribuno would have made those designs, he said softly. I suppose I was right.
My question is, can she do it? Said Claudia. Let's say she becomes a Hierophant. All I've heard of them are children's stories. I thought they were scrumming giants. What do we actually know about what they could do? Sanchia remembered the vision of Clef's she'd seen. The thing wrapped in black, standing on the dunes. They were goddamn monsters, she rasped. They were devils. That thing in the box told me as much. They waged a war that turned the land to ash and sand. One could do the same here.
Right, said Orso, shivering. So I think my first plan is looking pretty good right now. We find a boat. We get on that boat. We take the boat far across the ocean, and then we, I don't know, keep living for a while. How does that sound?
You weren't listening, said Sanchia lowly. I told you. She said she wants to become Company Candiano.
And what's the significance of that? Cried Orso. It's not like that stands out from the sea of other crazy shit you've been saying for the past half hour.
Think. I told you, that machine, the voice in the box.
This Valeria you spoke to, said Orso.
Right. Sanchia hesitated. This part of her story, she knew, was the most inexplicable and the most disturbing. You believe me about that, right? She asked. About what she said, what she did to me? I know it all sounds insane. Orso was still for a long time, thinking.
I have some ideas about that, but I do believe. Please continue.
Okay, so Valeria told me that the way the Hierophants did their ritual, said Sanchia. You first mark the body holding the spirit, then mark what you wish to transfer it into.
I must admit, said Geo,
that in the course of our projects, it's grown pretty hard to discern one bit of mystical shit from another.
Geo's right, said Claudia. Please clarify how that matters. Remember, right as I took the job for Clef, Candiano Company changed up their sachets, yes? Said Sanchia.
Yeah, said Geo. We ought to make whole new ones for half the prostitutes in Tavon.
Right. It was a big shift. Nobody knew why it got changed. At the time, I didn't think much about it. But now, after hearing what she said, I'm thinking that those new sachets are more than just sachets. Berenice's mouth dropped open in horror. You think the sachets, the little buttons being carried by every single Candiano employee? Sanchia nodded grimly. Estelle either issued them or tampered with them when they went out. I think they double as the markers the Hierophants used.
Then when Estelle starts the ritual, said Orso, all the people carrying those sachets with the markers,
they all die, said Sanchia. Maybe a few who set their sachets aside get lucky, but for all intents and purposes, the whole of Company Candiano dies.
All of their minds and souls get invested in Estelle, who then becomes a Hierophant. She looked at Orso. We leave and let Estelle do her thing, and all your old co-workers, and all the other thousand-some-odd people who work at Company Candiano, even the damned maids, all die a horrible, horrible death. For a moment, they all just sat there.
So, said Sanchia,
yeah, we have to stop her. The voice in the box, Valeria, said she could edit all their tools so they wouldn't work anymore, but to do that, we need Clef, which Estelle has. After she killed Gregor. She shook her head. So, sorry, Orso, but it seems like we're going to have to figure out a way to kill your old girlfriend. And we've got until midnight to do it. Orso and Berenice looked horrified.
Assassinate Estelle Candiano, said Orso faintly. On the Candiano Campo?
I've gotten in there before, said Sanchia. I can do it again.
Doing it once, said Berenice, actually makes it harder. They've got the gates closed, and they know we came in through the canals. All the easy routes will be eliminated. They'll be ready.
But I'm not just a thief anymore, whispered Sanchia, staring into space. I can do a hell of a lot more than I used to. She looked around the crypt, her eyes unfocused, like she was seeing many invisible things. And I think soon I'll learn how to do a whole lot more.
You might be changed, said Orso. And you might have escaped Estelle. But you can't do much against a couple of cohorts of soldiers shooting at you, Sanchia. One person, no matter how augmented, can't fight an army.
We don't even know where we want to attack,
said Giovanni.
Yes, we do, said Sanchia.
She looked at Orso. And you do, too. Estelle needs to start her ritual with the death of one person. Just one. She hated Tomas, but there's someone else she hates even more. Someone who's still alive. And I can think of only one place she'd choose for her transformation. Orso frowned at her for a moment. Then he went white and said,
Oh my God.
Is this where you want him, ma'am?
Asked the attendant. Estelle Candiano stared around her father's office. It was as she'd remembered it. All grim gray stone. All walls with far too many angles. A huge window on the far side stared out at the city of Tavan, and a second small circular window stared up at the sky. These were the only reminder that this large room existed in any semblance of reality. She remembered being here once, as a child, when her father had first built it. She'd played before his desk, drawing on the stone floor with chalk. She'd been a child then, but when she'd gotten older and become a woman, she'd been disinvited from such places, where powerful men made powerful decisions. Women, she'd understood, were unfit for inclusion among those ranks.
Ma'am?
Asked the attendant again.
Said Estelle.
What?
Do you want him there?
Asked the attendant.
By the wall.
Yes. Yes, that will do.
All right, they should have him here shortly.
Good.
And the rest of my things, from the abandoned foundry, they're on the way, yes? I believe so, ma'am.
Good.
She looked around at the office again.
My workshop, she thought. Mine. And soon I shall have the tools here. To make wonders the world cannot imagine.
Estelle looked at her left hand. Within a few hours, the skin there, as well as the skin on her wrist, her arm, her shoulder, and breast, would all be marked with delicately drawn sigils. A chain leading from her palm, which would be holding the dagger, of course, to her heart. Ancient sigils of containment, of transference, capable of directing huge amounts of energies into her body, her soul. There was the sound of squeaking, rattling wheels in the hall outside. Estelle Candiano considered that she was likely the only person alive who knew of those ancient sigils and how to use them. The sound of squeaking wheels grew closer. She was the only one, she thought, except possibly the person being wheeled to her right now. Estelle turned to face the door as the two attendants directed the rolling bed into the office. She looked at the shrunken, frail figure nestled in its sheets, face covered in sores, eyes tiny and bleary and red and thoughtless. She smiled. Hello, Father. Chapter 34.
Is a direct attack even possible? Said Claudia. If you all are right about this Imperiat thing, couldn't Estelle shut down any assault?
The Imperiat isn't all-powerful, said Sanchia. It has a limited range, and I don't think it's easy to operate. If Estelle screws it up, it could kill all the scryvings in the mountain, which would send the whole place down on her head. I think she knows that. She'll be cautious.
So a quick strike, said Geo. Fast, before she can prepare.
Right, but fast is a problem, said Sanchia. I don't see how we get to the mountain without a fight. There's hundreds of soldiers between us and them.
Direct confrontation, though, said Claudia. I always advise against it.
Like we say, you've always got three options, said Geo. Across, under, or over. No tunnels to go under. No way across through all those mercenaries. And I doubt if we can go over. You'd have to plant an anchor to make an air sailing rig go, and that means getting to the mountain, which is kind of our problem.
It's mad to ask, but can we develop a way to fly without an anchor? Said Claudia. Berenice, Orso, and Sanchia grew still. They slowly looked at one another.
What?
Said Claudia.
We've seen people fly, said Berenice.
And do it scrumming well, said Orso. Brilliant.
Claudia stared at them.
You have?
Berenice leapt up and ran to a large trunk in the corner. She opened it, hauled something out, and brought it back to the table. It looked like two iron plates tied together with fine, strong ropes with a bronze dial in the center. And they looked like they were crusted over with blood.
Is that? Said Claudia.
They're gravity plates, said Berenice, excited. Made by Estelle Candiano herself. Assassins were able to jump over walls and buildings with them.
And more than that, said Sanchia. They could basically fly with the damn things.
Well then, said Claudia.
Holy shit!
So it's simple, said Giovanni. You just use the plates to fly to the mountain, or, say, jump from roof to the mountain.
Sanchia looked at the gravity plates.
She tensed the muscle in her mind, opened the floodgates, and looked.
She'd expected the plates to glimmer and shine brightly, as any powerfully scribed item did. But they did not. Rather, they looked like a patchwork of silver, shining in some spots, but not in others. She shook her head.
No, they're not working right, she said.
Some of the scribing commands are operating, but not all of them, so the whole rig is non-functional.
You can tell that just by looking at it?
Said Orso, stunned.
Yeah, said Sanchia.
And I can talk to it.
You can talk to it?
Shut up and let me see her. She shut her eyes, placed her bare hands on the plates, and listened.
Location. Location of mass,
said the plates.
Cannot. Compilation. Incomplete. Mass. 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 Lacking all directionality. Mass. Need density of mass. Location of mass. Mass. Orientation critical to activate sequence for.
She shook her head. It's weird. It's like listening to someone with a head injury muttering in their sleep. It's not making sense. She opened her eyes. It's like their broken. Claudia clucked her tongue. You said Estelle Candiano made these?
Yeah, said Sanchia. Why?
Well, if I were her, and if I knew there was a chance my enemies had stolen my toys, I'd just turn off the scribing definitions at my lexicon. It'd make them useless or broken, just like this rig.
Of course, said Orso. That's why the plates can't talk. Estelle has taken away some critical pillar in its logic, so the whole thing has collapsed.
Which means it won't work, said Claudia. So we're scrummed.
I guess we can't make our own definition plates that could make these run, sighed Geo. Estelle has basically achieved the impossible with this rig, said Orso. No one's ever exhibited such fine control over gravity short of a Hierophant. Remaking the impossible in a day is quite out of the question.
There was a silence as everyone thought about this. Berenice sat forward.
But we don't have to remake all of it, she said.
We don't? Said Sanchia.
No, Estelle's probably just deactivated a few critical scrivings, but the rest still work. If you've got a hole in a wall, you don't tear it down and make a whole new wall. You just cut a piece of stone to fit the hole.
Wait, said Orso. Are you saying we should fabricate the missing definitions ourselves?
Not we, said Berenice. Me. I'm faster than you, sir.
Orso blinked, taken aback. Then he gathered himself.
Fine, but your metaphor is shit. This isn't just filling in a goddamn hole in a wall. This is some complicated scrumming scriving, girl.
Good thing we've got someone who can talk to Riggs, then, said Berenice.
She slid into a seat across from Sanchia and pulled out a sheet of paper and a quill.
Go on. Tell me everything the plates are saying.
But it's gibberish, protested Sanchia.
Then tell me all the damned gibberish, then.
She started talking. She described how the plate plaintively asked for the location of this mass, begging for someone to tell it where the mass was, and the density of this mass, and so on and so on. She kept hoping Berenice would tell her to stop, but she didn't. She just kept writing down everything Sanchia said, until finally, she held up a finger. Berenice slowly sat back in her chair, staring at the sheet of paper before her. Half of it looked to be notes. The other half was covered in sigils and strings of symbols. She turned to look at Orso.
I am starting to believe everyone's been trying to scribe gravity wrong, sir. And only Estelle Candiano has ever really figured it out.
Orso leaned forward and examined what she'd written.
It's mad, but I think you're right. Keep talking.
You all could make sense of that, said Claudia.
Not entirely, said Berenice. But there's a common theme. There's this subject of mass, and the device is trying to figure out where this mass should be, and how big the mass is.
So, said Sanchia, what's that got to do with floating and flying?
Well, said Berenice, I'm not sure if I'm right here, but every scriver before us has assumed that gravity only worked one way, down and to the Earth. But Estelle's designs seem to suggest that everything has gravity. Everything pulls everything else to it. It's just that some things have a strong pull and others have a weak pull.
What? Said Giovanni. What rot?
It sounds mad, but that's how this rig works. Estelle's designs don't defy gravity. The rig convinces what it's touching that, say, there's a whole scrumming world just above it with a gravity equal to the Earth's. So the Earth's gravity is canceled out, and the thing just floats. The designs just reorient gravity, counterbalance it. Almost perfectly.
Is that possible? Said Claudia.
The hell with what's possible, said Orso. Can you figure out what's missing? Can you fabricate the definitions to get the damned thing working, Berenice?
I could probably do it all if I had a month, she said. But I don't think we need it all. We don't need all the crucial calibrations or control strings.
We don't? Said Sanchia, nervously.
No. She looked at her. Not if you can just talk to the damned thing. All I need to fabricate is some definitions that can give the rig some impression of the location and density of this mass. And it would have to match these sigils etched on the rig, of course.
Orso licked his lips. How many definitions?
Berenice did some calculations on the corner of her paper. I think 4 should do.
He stared. You think you can fabricate 4 definitions in a handful of hours? Most fabricators can barely manage 1 in a week.
I've been neck deep in Candiano's shit for the past days, said Berenice. I've been looking at all their strings, their designs, their methodology. I think I can make it work. But there's another problem. We'll still need to put these definitions in a lexicon to actually make them effectual. We can't just walk into one of the Dandolo foundries and slip these in there. The guards wouldn't even let you do that, sir.
Could they work in a combat lexicon?
Asked Claudia.
Like the portable ones they use in the wars?
Those are pretty limited to powering weaponry, said Berenice. And they're hard to get a hold of, as anything having to do with the wars often is.
And the test lexicon back at my workshop can't cast far enough, said Orso. It only extends 1.5 miles or so, not nearly enough to fly Sanchia to the mountain.
We can't take it with us either, said Berenice. Not only is it stuck on tracks in the workshop, but it weighs close to 1,000 pounds itself.
Right, said Orso. Shit.
He fell into silence, glowering into the wall.
So are we scrummed here? Said Sanchia.
Sounds like we're scrummed, said Gio.
No!
Orso held up a finger. A wild, mad gleam crept into his eye. He looked at Claudia and Giovanni, and the 2 scrappers recoiled slightly.
You 2, you do much work with twinning?
Claudia shrugged. As much as any scriver worth their salt does.
That'll do, said Orso. All of you, get up. We're going to my workshops. Berenice is going to need a lot of space and the proper tools to do her bit. And that's where we'll get to work as well,
he said, nodding at Claudia and Gio.
On what?
Said Claudia.
I'll figure it out along the way, he snapped.
They trooped out of the drainage tunnel into the gulf, then started up the hill. They moved quickly, filing through the commons with the air of refugees or fugitives. Orso seemed filled with a mad energy, muttering to himself excitedly. But it wasn't until they approached the Dandolo walls that Sanchia glanced at him and saw his cheeks were wet with tears. Orso, she said quietly. You all right?
I'm fine, he said.
He wiped his eyes.
I'm fine. Just... God, what a waste.
A waste?
Estelle, he said. The girl figured out how goddamn gravity works. She figured out how to make a listening rig, all while being trapped in some hole in the mountain.
He paused for a moment, and seemed too stricken for words.
Imagine what wonder she could have made for us all, if she'd only had a chance. And now she's become too dangerous to be free. What a waste. What a scrumming waste.
When they got to the workshops, Sanchia sat at a table with her hands on the plates, while Berenice set up scribing blocks, parchment papers, and, of course, dozens of definition plates and molten bronze and styli to do the actual fabrication. Orso brought Claudia and Giovanni to the back of the workshop, where his test lexicon sat on rails that slid back into an oven-like chamber in the wall, with a thick iron door.
God,
said Gio, looking at it.
How I'd love to get my hands on one of these. Something that could actually, genuinely, allow you to toy around with definitions.
Claudia examined the iron door and the chamber.
Pretty massive heat resistance commands in this, she said. It's a tiny lexicon, relatively speaking, but it still throws out a huge amount of temperature. If your idea is for us to build a test lexicon to carry around, that's a giant task.
I don't want you to build a lexicon, said Orso. I just want you to build a box, specifically a box shaped like that.
He pointed at the chamber.
Huh?
Said Claudia.
You just want us to build a heat chamber?
Yes. I want you to duplicate the one in the wall and twin them. But we'll need a switch to activate and deactivate the twinning designs. Get me?
The scrappers exchanged a glance.
I guess,
said Claudia.
Good, said Orso. Then do it.
This was a familiar job for the scrappers, who Orso knew were a deft hand at construction, and his workshops offered far finer tools than what they'd used in the crypt. Within less than 3 hours, they had the basic raw structure ready, and they started scribing the twinning sigils on its frame. Claudia looked at Orso, who had half his body stuck in the chamber in the wall as he did his own delicate work.
What's going in this box exactly?
She asked him.
Technically, said Orso, nothing.
Why are we building a box that'll hold nothing?
Said Geo.
Because, said Orso, it's what the box will think it holds that matters.
Since we've got a serious scrumming deadline here, said Claudia, can you cut to the point?
I had the idea when we talked to Sanchia's key, Clef or whatever, said Orso.
He popped out of the chamber, dashed to a blackboard covered in sigils, and made a few adjustments.
He talked about how impressive twinning was, and later I realized Tribuno Candiano had developed a way to scribe reality. I mean, the mountain is basically a big box that's sensitive to all the changes that take place inside it. It's aware of its contents, in other words. It's something Tribuno and I toyed with back in the day, but it required too much effort to manage. But what if you could build a box that was somewhat aware of its contents, and then twin the box? Then if you put something into one box, the other box thinks it holds that exact same thing as well.
Claudia stared at him, her mouth open as she understood.
So, your idea is to duplicate the heat chamber here in your workshops, twin it, and we'll take the empty double into the Candiano Campo.
Right, said Orso cheerfully.
And because the first chamber will know it holds a test lexicon, then the double will also think it holds a test lexicon, so the empty one will project the necessary definitions far enough for Sanchia's rig to work, is that it?
That's the theory, said Orso.
He grinned wide enough that they saw all of his teeth.
We're essentially twinning a chunk of reality, only this particular chunk happens to hold a small lexicon loaded with the definitions we need to do the shit we need to do. Make sense?
This is tying my brain in knots, said Geo faintly. You're scribing something to believe it's scribed, in other words.
In essence, said Orso. But that's what scribing is. Reality doesn't matter. If you can change something's mind enough, it'll believe whatever reality you choose.
How are we supposed to do this exactly? Said Claudia.
Well, you two aren't doing shit, really, snapped Orso. I'm doing the hard bit, where I make the heat chamber in the wall aware of what it holds. Then you're just doing your basic twinning designs. So could we stop talking and let me get back to goddamn work?
They worked for a few hours more, the scrappers and Orso sprinting back and forth and crawling in and out of the heat chamber, placing their sigils and strings in just the right places. Eventually, the scrappers were done, and they just sat there looking at Orso's legs sticking out of the chamber as he finished up. Finally, he slid out.
I believe I am finished, he said quietly.
wiping sweat from his brow.
How do we test it? Asked Claudia.
Good question. Let's see.
Orso walked over to his shelves and took out something that looked like a small iron can.
A heating rig, he said. We use it to make sure the lexicon chambers are insulated properly.
He hit a switch on the side, tossed the can into the chamber in the wall, and shut and locked the door.
Should get up to some pretty incredible temperatures in there quick.
So now we,
said Gio. Orso looked around, grabbed a wooden paint box from one of his tables, dumped the paint cans out, and tossed it into the newly built chamber.
Help me get this thing on the floor, he said, and turn it on.
He and Gio lifted the box off the table and, grunting, carefully placed it on the floor. Then they shut and locked the big iron doors and turned on the twinning scrivings by twisting a bronze dial on the side. Suddenly the box creaked, like someone had just placed a substantial load on it.
Good sign, said Orso. Test lexicons are heavy as hell. If it thinks it holds one, then theoretically the thing itself would abruptly gain weight.
They waited a moment. Then Orso said,
All right, turn it off.
Gio turned back the dial. Orso shoved the latch on the door up and opened the chamber. An immense cloud of hot black smoke came billowing out. They all coughed and waved the smoke away from their faces, then peered into the heating chamber. As the smoke dissipated, the small, shriveled form of a burned box emerged. Orso cackled with delight.
Looks like it's scrumming works to me. The double believed it held the same heating rig as the first.
It works, said Gio faintly. I can't believe it really works.
Yes, now we just put this thing on wheels, and we've basically got a light, mobile lexicon on our hands. Of a sort, I mean.
They finished the job, mounting the empty chamber on a wooden cart and making sure the whole thing was secure. Once they were done, they sat back and marveled at their work.
Doesn't look like much, said Gio.
Could do with a paint job, yeah, said Orso.
But it's still probably the biggest damned thing I've ever done,
said Gio. Orso, said Claudia. You realize what you've done here, right? Scrivings always been localized. You've got to stay close to one big expensive piece of equipment for it to work. But you've essentially come up with a cheap, easy way to cover a whole region without having to build 40 lexicons or whatever. Orso blinked, surprised.
Have I? Well, it's still restricted, mind. But I suppose you're right.
If we all live through this thing, said Claudia, this would be an incredibly valuable technique.
Speaking of living through this thing, said Gio,
how do we plan on surviving after? Like, we are talking about attacking the heart of a merchant house and killing a scion of the industry.
Orso stared at the heating chamber on the cart and slowly cocked his head.
Claudia, he said softly, how many scrappers are there in total?
How many? I don't know, 50 or so.
And how many would follow you faithfully? A dozen at least?
Yeah, thereabout. Why? Orso grinned deliriously and tapped the side of his head.
I don't know what it is about mortal panic, he said. But it keeps giving me the best scrumming ideas. We're just going to need to file some paperwork. And maybe buy some property.
The scrappers exchanged a glance.
Oh boy, said Gio quietly.
Sanchia sat opposite Berenice, watching as the girl dashed from blackboard to parchment to scribing blocks, writing strings of sigils on any surface she could find with a mesmerizing, liquid grace. She'd finished two definition plates so far. The plates themselves were about 2 feet in diameter, wrought of steel, and they were covered in looping spirals of impossibly delicate bronze sigils, all put there by Berenice's flowing stylus. Berenice looked up from her work, a strand of hair clinging to her sweaty forehead. She seemed to glow with a happy energy, and Sanchia,